Proverbs 14:12 declares, "There is a way that appears to be right, but in the end it leads to death." How can the believer tell when what appears to be right is actually wrong? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on the book of Proverbs. We focus on chapters 14 and 15. I'm your host, Alden Thompson. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Linda Emerson, Assistant Professor of Philosophy. So, let me come to that question. Can we tell with certainty when it's right and when it's wrong?
Well, I think in many cases, yes, but not always. And see, here's where I think sacred texts are so valuable in cases mm-hmm. like this, because you're not stuck with your own understanding, your own experience. You have the experience of generations and generations of people who have lived in a broken world, and because of God's activity in history mm-hmm. and because of their own learning. You know, I tell people sometimes that there's two ways to learn. You can learn by the experience of others. That's very inexpensive because they've already paid the bill. Or you can learn by your own experience, mm-hmm. and you will learn your lessons very well by your own experience, but you'll pay to the last dime. And you know, I think in these sacred texts we have the wisdom that's been paid for by other people. And that's even just speaking on human terms, without yeah. without allowing for the wisdom of a divine influence, see. And so the combination of revelation from God and the accumulation mm-hmm. of human wisdom and commentary, I think, puts you in a very good position when you face a dilemma such as the one you raise, Alden.
Well, you know, I've got yeah. myself into a peck of trouble. I'm not very repentant over it.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. But when I wrote my book, Inspiration, mm-hmm. I used the phrase that the Bible is more like a casebook than a codebook.
Yeah, that created some stir, didn't it?
I think I would say now that the Bible is both codebook and casebook.
That makes sense.
But what I was trying to do was to point out that there are circumstances, conflicting situations. You can't just simply obey everything that was ever given in Scripture.
Yeah.
Now, through a remarkable series of circumstances, which I won't detail here, I've come to the place where I've applied a passage I memorized as a kid, 1 Corinthians 10:11. All these things happen unto them for examples.
Yeah.
And they are written mm-hmm. for our admonition upon whom mm-hmm. the ends of the world are come. Yeah. What you have in the Bible is a host of examples. Mm-hmm. No one of them will necessarily fit one-to-one.
Right.
Now, if you have a prophet coming in, putting his finger in your face, like Nathan did to David, you are the man. It would be very difficult to take a casebook approach. But once the prophet's gone and you have the experience, then you have to start asking questions.
Then it does become
then
part
it becomes
of the casebook.
Very important, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and the whole issue of divorce in the Bible, I think, fits this paradigm well, because you see a lot of instructions about you see the holding up of an ideal that divorce should not be, and I think of Malachi 2, I think yep. it is, where God says, I hate divorce mm-hmm. because it destroys, in essence, it destroys family and, mm-hmm. And so forth. It doesn't say he hates divorced people, but he hates divorce. Mm-hmm. And then you see other provisions, like a man who divorces his wife should not go back to her. If you divorce your wife, give her a writ of divorcement. So you mm-hmm. have this mm-hmm. tension between an ideal, but what do you do when an mm-hmm. ideal isn't met?
Mm-hmm.
See, mm-hmm. then you have to figure out what mm-hmm. are we going to do to be most redemptive.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it fits.
Well, Matthew 19:8, you know, the passage says the divorce was given for the hardness of your heart.
Yeah.
That is the only explicit statement that I know of in Scripture. And by explicit, you got lots of illustrations, but to say out loud, I gave that to you for the hardness of your heart, gives to the point of adaptation. You can't reach the ideal, but he is adapted to that particular concern.
And see, mm-hmm. I tell people, especially when I'm doing premarital counseling, that, you know, we all come to marriage with a set of expectations. Some of those will be exceeded by the reality of marriage. Some of them will be met, mm-hmm. but some of them, reality will not meet our expectations. And, you know, it's the zone between the ideal and the actual, where the actual does not attain to the ideal. That's the zone of human pain. Mm-hmm. You know, any expectation that is exceeded is the zone of joy.
Yeah.
Okay? And so it becomes, that's true about life, that any expectation you have that is noble and right that is not met leaves you in the zone of pain, and you have to figure out how do we resolve mm-hmm. this? How do we get out of it? And sometimes mm-hmm. the brokenness is so bad that, that there is nothing that you can do to fix it.
Yeah. Well, I would like to focus on two different concepts that are in this section of Proverbs, one on kindness and one admonishing, the other one patience. And what I'd like to do is just simply I'll read a couple of Proverbs on each of those and then ask the question, are there cases where we should not be kind or where we can be too kind? Ellen White, for instance, in the Adventist tradition, used the phrase a cruel kindness.
Yeah. Mm.
Then, same way with patience. So here are the Proverbs, 14:21. It is a sin to despise one's neighbor, but blessed is the one who is kind to the needy. 14:31, whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. Now notice in this case it's kindness to the needy.
Right.
But what about kindness in a more general way? Should one also be kind to that much maligned group in Proverbs, the wicked? Now let's take a look at a couple of Proverbs on patience. 14:29. Whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. 15:18, a hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. Let's start with kindness. Are there places where we should put limits on our kindness?
You know, I think there are ways and ways to think about kindness, and one... I'm not going to try to offer any complete set of definitions, but it seems to me that we can think about kindness in a weak sort of way, and we can think about kindness in a stronger sort of way. And mm-hmm. If we think about kindness in this weak way, which I'm going to characterize, and I realize this is a bit simplistic, as you know, kind of letting everything, kind of going with the flow, kind of
not
in
worry
a way,
about it, just not, shrug.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It kind of you know. Being nice, maybe even in being quote nice, even in situations where maybe we ought not to, the kind of the people pleaser mm-hmm. way, which to me it seems is kind of emotionally weak because somehow we are dependent upon others thinking well of us to the point where we will let things happen that we ought not to let happen. But I'm not sure that we have to give up the notion of being kind even as we set boundaries mm-hmm. which say this is permissible and this is not. Mm-hmm. You know, I have conversations every single quarter with students who have difficulties. And there are times when I have to help them in their maturing.
Yeah.
You know, help them learn how to accept responsibility for their actions in fairness to all the students who are in that same class with that student. I have to make it clear to a student where the boundary is. But mm-hmm. I can do that impatiently, and I'll admit that that happens. I mean, more often than I would like. Mm-hmm. But when I'm acting out of this stronger sense of kindness, I don't think of it as a cruel kindness, but I do think of it as a principled
kindness. Well, the other kind of kindness you described
is not
would be the cruel kindness. You know, the
in a
wishy-washy.
Way, it is.
Yeah, I think it's the wishy-washy kindness that enables people to remain in their circumstance. It's a cruel kindness.
Yeah, it doesn't really help that student. If I'm going to be kind to you, we're going to have to do something that may be a bit difficult here. Yeah. At least I'm going to have to, I have to hold this line, and I invite you to step up to it, and I hope that you will. I mean, I have no control over what that person chooses.
As we're talking here, Linda, I think of a marvelous example, and I'll mention a name here, Scott Ligman, who has tasked with a terrible job
of helping
people to keep their boundaries.
Exactly.
But he'll say, you know, I can't mm-hmm. sign off on this mm-hmm. until you give me a plan.
I
want to see a plan as to how you're going to take care of it.
This
then
is just,
I will
this,
sign.
Right.
See?
This is the next thing that must happen.
I think kindness is always appropriate. It just manifests itself in different ways.
Yes.
And to me, kindness is the opposite of harshness.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Even if I have to disagree with you and draw a line that I want you to step up to,
correct.
I don't have to do it in a harsh or arrogant or uncaring
That's
manner.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it maybe has more to as much to do with attitude.
Yes.
I mean, with the
yes.
with the in a way the spirit that you bring to
kindness
the encounter
is a way of me recognizing the fact that no matter what you've done or who you are or how you've conducted yourself, you are a child of God.
Exactly.
Okay. And if I lose sight of that, then yeah. I will be unkind.
Then I will mm-hmm. be unkind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, does the next word...
Patience is more difficult, Alden.
Patience is more difficult. You know that patience is on every New Testament virtue list, and anger is on none of them.
Oh.
Some of us are tasked with the life lesson of learning patience. But the most powerful people I know are people who are able to lay aside their anger...
Yeah,
I mean, powerful people in the sense of using power for good, mm-hmm. you know, are able to lay aside their anger and just patiently, persistently work methodically, quietly, and calmly to get to the bottom of a problem and help resolve
and
the conflict.
And they don't react to the way they've been treated.
No. They're focused. I want to say they're focused this way, but they're tuned in to a different channel.
But patients also begin to the same understanding of the humanity of the people you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But patience, I like the old adage: patience is a virtue. Possess it if you can.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that both these proverbs mean a slightly different word. One is quick-tempered, mm-hmm. and the other one is hot-tempered. You know, if you run into a person who loses their temper, even while they're trying to be patient, it doesn't help. And so I think in both cases, the Proverbs are quite clear. And even on the kindness to the needy, you know, it's very interesting that qualification is listed there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does have broader applications. Mm-hmm. One last quick question here. Would it be possible to reclaim some of the wicked through patience?
Oh, I think no doubt.
No doubt.
No doubt.
Yeah, I don't know who the wicked are. I think I might be among the wicked. I mean, really.
It is a sobering thing to think about ourselves introspectively because, you know, you begin to realize that you're not really as good as you appear to be. I'm not saying that to you. I'm saying that to us as humans.
Right,
you know?
Right. We are all capable of great wickedness.
If everybody knew us transparently, we would not appear to be quite so so good as we are. You know?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I don't know how it is with the rest of you, but for instance, on course evaluations, teacher evaluations, there are some things that I suspect to be the case.
Yeah.
And I hope the students haven't noticed, but guess what? They almost always have seen them.
But I would remind you that God is patient with us, not wanting any of us to be lost. That's what Peter said. So.
Yeah.
When you think of the Old Testament, God is incredibly patient, but that's another whole topic, and we won't go into that one today. Thank you, Dave and Linda, for your helpful participation today. And I want to thank David Olson, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.